This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation. Hello, my name is Drew, and I am joined, of course, by Ryan Everett.
Hello.
Hello, Ryan.
Yes, thanks again for rousing discussion about WCW and their different concepts that they would think of.
That is absolutely right. And this is, of course, the third edition of the GWCW Podblast series that we're doing. And just kind of some very loose research projects on various WCW topics. So what we're doing tonight is a very, very interesting one, I think. It's the Marquis or Marcus of Queensberry Cup, which was Ric Flair as the world champion taking on the TV champion, Lord Steven Regal. This came about, Steven Regal, there was not a lot to it. He just kind of challenged Ric Flair to this Marcus of Queensberry Cup tournament or rules matches or whatever you want to call it, I guess. It's kind of ill-defined a little bit, but it's kind of a take on the old World of Sports style round system of matches. It's a 5-round series of matches where each round is only 5 minutes long. It's more mat based, supposedly. No over the top DQs. There's judges as well. So at the end of each round, there's three judges give their scores. And I'm sure that's something that we will get into. So Ryan, right off the bat, any opening thoughts about this, this concept here?
I kind of remember, I don't think I watched the whole thing. Like, Worldwide wasn't like I have to be in front of the TV and watching it at this time for me, but I did watch it occasionally. So I definitely remember seeing one or two of them and being very confused because it was definitely somewhere. It wasn't the first or the last one. And, you know, WCW is not great for explaining rules and stipulations, especially if it's something that they've been doing already. They just kind of assume that you know what's going on. So it was an odd match when I first saw it 26 years ago now.
So I did not see this at the time. I didn't get Worldwide or really any of the syndicated shows, at least as far as I know. I certainly got Saturday Night, but that was kind of it. I did have the benefit of watching this much later on, so it was not as confusing. I kind of knew what I was getting going into
right.
it, but
and having just Saturday Night, WCW, it was like these shows were almost like their own universe.
Yeah, and that's such a weird continuity throughout the history of JCP and WCW is you would have, I mean, going back to like, you know, the mid 80s, you would have these different universes depending on what show you were watching. So Ric Flair would be a heel on World Championship Wrestling, but in the summer of 1985 in on like the Mid-Atlantic show or on Worldwide, he was a full-on babyface.
Right, yeah, babyface, and then heel on the cable show because he was going around the country and all the other promotions.
And so you kind of, even throughout all the changes and everything, you kind of still had that even through, you know, like the NWO era and stuff. It was very, very strange.
And I know, like, on they're doing the Monday Night Wars on with JT and Chad, and like there's pay-per-view matches that they didn't see the guys at all on the Nitros leading up to it. So it's like,
yeah,
if you were only watching Nitro, you might go 5 weeks without seeing the TV champ and, you know, like being wondering, who is this guy? How do they become champ? If you just watch Nitros and the pay-per-views.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly it. I mean, like in 96, Lex Luger was the television champion, and that whole title run was essentially just on a WCW Saturday night. And it rarely mentioned on Nitro.
He carried the belt with him like only half the time on Nitro if he was wrestling.
Yeah.
It was really weird.
Yeah. Just, I mean, that's kind of, in one sense, it's cool. I like that idea. But it's just as like a fan, it's very confusing. And it is, that's just one of the very strange holdovers that just existed. I mean, really throughout the entire history of the promotion. I mean, famously 2000 WCW Saturday night was booked by Jimmy Hart. And
yeah.
So you just had, you know, he was just kind of left alone to his own devices to have these cool little Saturday night shows where, you know, Three Count was having awesome matches or something.
Dance Party Rave of a version of Saturday Night, right?
Yes.
The opening was it was no longer the robotic arms putting the wrestlers together. It was a rave for some reason.
Yeah. they're trying to bring it into the new millennium, I guess.
Yeah.
So anyways, let's get into this here. So this aired, took place April 30th through May 28th, 1994. And again, a very odd part of this is it's 5 5-minute matches, and they would air one each week. So it's not even like this played out over the course of one TV show. It was over the course of 5 weeks. So you would get you'd get to see the world champion Ric Flair wrestle on TV, but it was only 5 minutes. So just a very odd concept, a very cool concept in one sense, but again, just kind of frustrating and confusing, which, I mean, really, that's, I guess that sums up a lot of what WCW is.
Yeah.
Cool, interesting, frustrating, confusing. So, all right, let's get into this here. So round one, we've got, let's see, the judges, and the judges will be changing, but the first round, the judges are referee Jimmy Jett, WCW official Grizzly Smith, and the
father of the year, Grizzly.
Absolutely. And the national five-time world champion, or what is it, the five-time world champion, two times United States national champion, and Pan American champion directly from the Marine Corps, Sergeant Craig Pittman.
Or as the body calls him in the later rounds, Gomer.
Yeah, and that is something we will get to, is Jesse will not stop making fun of Craig Pittman for being a Marine. But even Bobby, so we have on commentary right now, it's Bobby and Tony, and even Bobby gets in some jabs at the Marine Corps. So I do think that's very funny that kind of throughout the entire thing, no matter who the color commentator is, they're making fun of the Marine.
Yeah.
So what did you think of this first round here, Ryan?
So the first round, it did a good job of like showing you what the concept is going to be, what type of matches they're going to be. I think that it's slow going, very technical on the ground. And I thought it was one of the better, like, it's really lays the groundwork for what you're going to get.
Yes.
And this is the one Regal wins this, I think, by the judge's decision.
Mm-hmm.
Correct?
Yeah.
Which I thought was good because it's kind of establishing that, you know, this is something Regal's used to, so it makes sense that he would have the advantage the first time around.
Yeah, that's a good point. So the scoring, which doesn't really make any sense, it's what is it, 10-10-9, in favor of Regal, which I don't, they don't understand, you know, how, or they don't explain how you earn points or what the points really mean or anything. So there is that. The crowd, so this is these are all Disney tapings. These were at Disney World. I thought the crowd, I don't know whether they were like being hyped up and instructed to cheer or what, but I thought the crowds were pretty into this the entire time.
Yeah, I don't know. I know like the joke has always been that there were big signs telling them to applaud or boo, but it didn't seem like really can't like that they were just acting along. They like seemed pumped up and enjoying it and stuff, and like really booing Regal when he came out, cheering Flair. Flair's giving high fives to everyone.
Yeah,
it seemed somewhat authentic at least. I mean,
yeah,
I'm not sure.
Yeah, I mean they fooled me anyways. if it was fake, yeah, we got USA chants and the whole deal. So something that will be a reoccurring theme in each of these segments is that I think Regal is great. Regal's an awesome wrestler. This really to me is a Ric Flair show. I think he really puts in a ton of effort. It feels like he really has something to prove here. You get him, you know, you get to see how he is on the mat. And how old was he? I mean, he was in his mid-40s at this point.
Yeah, he would have been 45, I think.
Yeah, that sounds right. So, I mean,
yeah,
you've got...
He turned 70, yeah, 45, 44.
Yeah. So you've got a guy in his mid-40s really going toe-to-toe with a wrestler who's very, very technical and in his prime. I think that's really impressive. We even get a judo throw from Ric Flair, which I thought looked awesome. I like the way this started. It's Ric Flair is a face at this point. Regal's the heel, but there's a very sportsmanship aspect to this. There's no cheating. They're shaking hands. It's very, very cool.
Well, Flair off the handshake at the beginning, and Regal gets one of his great facials, like that someone just ripped a huge fart.
Right. You're right. Yeah.
I think it's because Flair was slapping high fives on the way to the ring, so Regal doesn't want to touch, you know, the dirty Florida peasants that were giving Flair high fives, probably.
Of course, yeah. So I agree with you. I thought this really laid the foundation and kind of showed us what we were going to what to expect going forward. And I liked that it was very clean, no real wrestling moves, right? You know, even in terms of like Regal was hitting some forearms at the end, but they weren't flying off the top rope. They weren't even really, you know, running the ropes or anything. So, very, very cool. Do you have any thoughts overall on the judging of the rounds?
It's just very inconsistent, and not so much this one because at least there was a winner, but when we get into some of the later ones, it makes very little sense.
Yes. Yeah.
Not to say that like the Brawl for All was good at all, don't get me wrong, but at least there they put up something beforehand that how it was going to be scored. Like
right.
Those matches. So something like that, maybe, or just having Shivani say like, oh, each judge will score who they think, you know, was the dominant man per round, and that man will get their vote. Something like that.
Yeah, just something. yeah, a little. It's strange. It doesn't hurt overall. Like it doesn't really hurt the overall presentation and the overall quality of it for me. But it's just I don't know. You know, again, it's one of those things where WCW has a history of judges using judges, and I don't know where that came from. Territory-wise, like if that was something that they used to do, in the 70s or something in Mid-Atlantic or in Georgia, I don't know. But you've got Clash of the Champions, you've got the Wrestle War. Is it the Wrestle War 89 Flair Steamboat match that has the judges?
Yeah, because it's where Funk.
So that you've got these. It's just they love their judges for whatever reason.
And the thing that's so annoying is, I would say if they have judges, 90% of the time they're not going to matter at all. 5% of the time they'll actually make a decision that results in a winner, but the other 5% of the time it's a draw. The judge's decision is a draw. Like, no, your job is to pick who won. It's not to say that they both competed evenly.
Yeah, and there's three judges for a reason.
Yeah,
It's to break
exactly.
a tie.
It's like that's the one thing that I can't get past the Sting Flair Clash of the Champions one. Like, it's a great match, don't get me wrong, but the ending where they go to the judge's decision, and I think it's Sandy Scott rules it a for both men. It's like, no, that's not your decision. Your decision has to be one or the other.
Yeah, no, I feel the same way. I don't know. WCW and judges, what are you gonna do, I guess? All right, well, let's move on to round two here. So again, another 5-minute round. I liked this. You can kind of feel the elevation and the progression of the match from each round. And so Flair is down at this point. So I thought he was more aggressive here. He goes for the figure four for the first time. You see him, he starts moving towards using chops this time. And there's an overall a little bit more of like a desperate feel to it because you have Flair working, from behind at this point.
Yeah,
And
he's definitely
Rio trying
more.
to hold on.
Yeah, he's definitely more offensive going for it a little bit more. He hits a nice, like, little rolling armbar into a cross arm breaker, which is pretty unusual for Ric Flair. Just different off from him, and it was nice to see.
And this is another one where, Ric Flair is accused of being very formulaic, and this is an example, this whole series of him really, really branching out from that.
Yeah. No
And
back
again,
body drops, no being thrown off the top rope, no flare flops. Very different for him.
And again, it's late in his career like this. It's very cool to see. And again, you just get this sense of him just really going out there with something to prove. We get a draw for this round. I don't know. It could have been a draw. I don't know. Do you have a strong feeling on which guy should have won, maybe?
I think probably you should have probably given it to Flair. I mean, like, if kayfabe judging, I would say Flair was more impressive, I guess. But then again, Regal had like two pinfall attempts, I think, which I don't know if Flair had any. So, I mean, I guess, like, at least maybe you could say, like, oh, Flair was on offense most of the match, but Regal had pinfall attempts, which are told to, be decided into the judging or something.
And that's something else that wasn't entirely clear was, if they get a pinfall. I mean, I guess
Pinfall.
we learn kind of at the very end, but if you get a pinfall, does that end the match, or do you keep going with the 5 minutes? Or?
Round? Yeah.
Yeah. So, oh well. All right. Moving on here. Round three. We have a little bit of a change up now. So Jesse Ventura is here on commentary, and on the judges panel, we have Terry Taylor, Jimmy Jett, and again, Sergeant Craig Pittman. Yeah. So this is where Jesse.
Unchanged Craig Pittman, still in his military garb.
Yeah. He came straight from the battlefield. and so this is where we get Jesse really going in on Craig Pittman, calling him a jarhead and all of that. And it seems to make Tony a little bit uncomfortable at a certain point. He tries to distance himself from Jesse a little bit there.
Yeah, he does. Well, this is Pittman, obviously, this was like a year before he started wrestling, right?
Yes.
In 95,
okay. Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know what his connection was to the company at this point, if they had brought him in for a tryout or if he was like training at the power plant or what. I really don't know.
Yeah. Not well versed in Craig Pittman's career path.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, so round three, what did you think of this one?
This one was pretty good. I'm trying to think. Let me see. They're still doing the technical stuff, but you could kind of tell they're putting more. It's kind of getting into a feud also. Mm-hmm. It's a little more. It's still very technical, but it's. There's more forearms from Regal, more chops from Flair, and it's kind of like showing that it's not just for, you know, pure sport anymore. Now they want to beat the other guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool, because it makes sense. I mean, you know, these two guys, that's how they, both of them would react.
You know,
they would get more into it as it goes.
Exactly. Yeah, and you have a dynamic where Regal is coming off of a draw, and Flair is coming off of still not winning and still not being tied up.
Still behind.
So he's still behind. So you get him, you know, again, a little more aggression. He's working the leg more. Really starting to rely more heavily on the figure four. And you know, that's how the match ends, and that leads to him winning. And we do get our first visit from the youngest member of our team.
Yeah.
Of course.
Sorry, thought I had him down.
Oh no, I love it. I meant to introduce him. You know, as the third member of the team tonight, but and arguably the most important member of the team, I would think.
Oh yeah, probably.
Yeah. So we get Flair winning unanimously 10-9. So again, I don't know what 10-9 means.
Yeah, I guess all the refs judges had it as Flair 10, Regal 9, but yeah, I don't know how that is decided, really. Again.
Yeah. Yeah, so I don't know. I don't know. Here we go. On to round four. Another 5-minute round. If we're looking at each round, this one feels like Regal should have actually won it. It's the only one that feels like he was decidedly the dominant participant in the match. It is ruled a draw, but you have Regal kind of really starting to show his stuff here. Really very, very slick on the mat, very, very technically sound. And you show he kind of one-ups Flair at every turn on this one. It's very cool.
Yeah, there's quite a few times where he makes a reversal. He's got the regal stretch at one point. Yeah, this is, I think, definitely the most one-sided of the round.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. Again, it's ruled a draw, so, whatever. But I do like that we knew for sure that it was going into the fifth round, it was going to be tied up somehow. And I do like that they went rather than like 2-2, for instance. It's 1-1 with two draws. I think that does create an interesting dynamic. So, so round five, and now we're taken to the summer of 94. They did these outdoor tapings on, the New York City street?
I love that. It looks awesome, I think.
And yeah.
I think it's eventually where they, shot parts of the Nitro opening. And is it also is it also where Hogan had his parade, or was that a different part of Disney?
You know what? That is a good question. It looks like the same area, right? Because it's a big. I bet that's where they did have the parade, and I never thought about that. Them filming the Nitro opening there, but you're probably right.
I think they I don't know if they actually shot it there, but they were inspired by that.
Huh.
Or something like that. I remember Bischoff talking about it on a early episode of his podcast, back when he actually talked about stuff rather than just talking about how much he hates Dave Meltzer.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Either way, this looks very cool. This is a very cool setup and a very cool venue that they used throughout the summer of 94. This is a very quintessential WCW segment right here. And it's kind of everything that makes it great. They weren't afraid of using different setups and different venues and different atmospheres. And, so you have this outdoor show. It's the final round. It goes 5 minutes. It's a tie. And then we get the overtime round of another 5 minutes.
Right.
So now what did you think of this?
Well, this is the one where outside the ring, is it Sir William hits Flair with the umbrella? So they kind of make it out like the judges didn't give Regal the round because of that, but it's like, okay, well, if they didn't like doing that, they should have DQ'd him or something. They shouldn't have given him 10 points. This is where the judges, I think, it's kind of because this is another one where, for the most part, Regal has more offense, especially after Sir William's interference. So if you're looking at it in the ring, you should give it to Regal. But if you're taking into account what happened, you should deduct points from Regal. It's kind of I don't know. I thought it was kind of an odd way to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's strange. I do like that. I mean, so this is the one that most feels like a pro wrestling match, where definitely. This is, they kind of start pulling out all the stops here. So you get Flair off the top rope with a chop. You get them doing Irish whips and running the ropes. You get someone going over the top rope to play off the no DQ stipulation. You get William Regal Bill Dundee interfering. Yes, Sir William. It's cool. And man, the half to, or the overtime round, the sudden death round or whatever, it's nonstop action for those 5 minutes. I mean, they're really, really kind of leaving it all on the line. It's pretty great wrestling. Again, it's these really great, in my opinion, great and interesting and unique little matches with all of this just bizarre surrounding and these different frustrating and bizarre elements. And when you pull that all away, you have what I think is an awesome match here.
Yeah, I think this last, like, just to get into the GWCW aspect of this, like, I don't know, the first four rounds wouldn't really, it's a hard thing to rate overall.
Mm-hmm.
You rate it as one whole thing, well, you really shouldn't, because it's, you know, it is five separate matches, but this fifth round, I think it might make the back end of my list.
Yeah, I agree in that. So that's something I was going to ask you is, how do you rate this thing? How do you take it? Do you look at it? I mean, what I'm going to do is, I'll post this on the Facebook group as well, and I'll kind of put the question out there, and I'd like to get some discussion going about that. Is should this be taken as essentially one match because it's
different
just
rounds.
Different rounds of one overall match, or is since it's, you know, it's five different weeks supposedly.
Right.
If in 5 minutes, you know, kind of a best of five series of matches, or is it just one match with five rounds? Yeah, that's interesting. I would really like it. So I agree with you. If we're taking it as five different matches, I think the last match of this will probably make my list.
Right.
It, even if just as a representation for the whole thing.
Right.
If we are going to look at it as one whole match, I think it really jumps up a good bit for me. You know, not top 25 or anything, but it's a very, very well done and unique and interesting segment. If you take it as one match, just the progression.
Oh, go ahead.
Sorry. Oh, no, please, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, like, I'm sure you watched it the same way I did, just on YouTube. It's all there is one 50-minute continuous thing. So that kind of makes it feel like, just a straight-up match, because to me, I think the first four matches are taped the same day.
Yeah.
Flair's in purple the whole time. Regal's got his leg taped up, so I'm assuming it was one, maybe 2 days apart.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like they're just, you know, each round you go to a commercial break almost after, and the next round comes up. But if you're thinking about it, if an actual time it happened, it is a week between. So I kind of would compare it to, you know, like the Booker T, Benoit, or Nikita Magnum series, where it is a best of competition.
Yeah. So that's really interesting. I'm excited to get some more input from people on that, because I think I would really push for it to be treated as one match. I think there's good arguments either way. So we should say, so Ric Flair wins, he wins the cup, and you know, he is presented with a cup, which is very cool. This is something that's really cool. I mean, do you have any thoughts on the finish?
Well, before I get there real quick, I actually have it on in the background on mute, and the fifth match, there is a very large woman in the front row.
Yes.
And she She is no actor. She is into this. She's yelling at Sir William the whole time. At one point, she just, like, flipped his hat off. She is all about this match. And she is, I don't know, maybe she just happened to be there and was just loving the MGM setting, but she seems like she is a diehard WCW fan. She is someone I picture when you said, think of a WCW fan at the MGM tapings.
Yeah.
But
yep.
The actual match, I think it was good that they got to an actual pinfall here. It would have felt cheap if they went to the judge's decision, I think. I think this needed a definitive finish.
Yes. Yeah, I agree. So, you know, Ric Flair, now I'm trying to remember now. It's a roll-up, right?
Backslide.
Oh, it's a backslide. Yeah, that's right. That's right. You get a backslide win from Flair. And I mean, the crowd goes nuts. It's a great win, and it feels very, very earned.
It's definitely, it's a backslide, but it's not like a cheap, you know, fluke win.
No, not at all. And it's, again, it's just Regal's great. I think Flair is he steals the show here in all these matches, just showing what he can do in a wrestling ring that's different from his typical main event world title style matches. It's very, very good. I keep talking about kind of the atmosphere and kind of all the rules and everything surrounding the match, but just think about, so this is this last match, it's May 28th.
Right.
We are weeks away from Hogan coming into the company.
Yeah, I think 2 weeks. I think it was middle of June.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Whatever that clash was, it was right around then.
Yeah. So it's like the second or third week of June.
Right.
And, you know, even Hulk Hogan is mentioned during the last match.
Yeah, and after the match, Flair gives a promo, which is just so good at planting the seeds, because he's a face, but he's – and it's kind of like he's almost referring to Hogan as a heel, kind of. Like,
yeah.
He's kind of given, like, the speech he gave in 91 on the funeral parlor, like, Hogan, you know, you're – out making movies and I'm in here wrestling each and every week, and it's kind of cool, but as a face he's saying it, so it's not really being booed at or anything.
Right. Yeah, but you think
this is like a week before he actually turned heel, but
Yeah, but it's he's planting those seeds and setting that up for down the road. So it's such a unique, an interesting snapshot at what WCW was in 1994. And, and we should say, I mean, this is the first and only one of these that they ever did. I don't know if they were planning on doing more in the future or if it was always just going to be a one-off, but you have the world champion wrestling on a syndicated show, 5-minute matches in the style of an old British promotion.
It's just
going from this to Hulkamania in WCW just in a matter of weeks is it's just so striking.
And then even looking at it more, going from this to, you know, 10 months later in March, Flair's coming out of the crowd. He's been retired, and he's coming out of the crowd in drag to attack Randy Savage. I mean,
right. It's sad. Like I remember, you know, watching as a child, Hogan coming in, and you know, I was excited. I mean, I knew, you know, I wasn't like too cool for Hulk Hogan at the age of 10 or whatever.
Right.
You know, I obviously I knew who Hulk Hogan was, and I thought, oh man, like he's in WCW. This is cool. This is the biggest promotion, all that. And you know, when as a child, I'm not really able to. I wasn't able to distinguish like. Even necessarily like good or bad, but it just, oh, this is just very different.
Right.
You know,
I kind of thought it was like, because I knew, you know, WCW was more like, I call them like long matches, and WWF didn't have that. And then 94 kind of switches because you have Bret Hart as champ in WWF and, you know, Hogan eventually, it becomes the Hogan Show in WCW, so then you have kind of a switch in the presentation.
Right.
Really.
Yeah. Yeah, that is very interesting. And that's a good point. I hadn't thought about that, but you're totally right. And the first half of 94, gosh, even when Hogan comes in, you know, through like Fall Brawl 94. I mean, that's my absolute favorite period of WCW. I think even more so than like, I don't know, 86, 87 even. It's just, it's such a special time in the promotion.
Right. Yeah, I'm more nostalgic for this year. Like the 86, 87 stuff is great, but I didn't experience it at the time. So I'm not like I've been watching it through this, but not the same, you know, not like, oh yeah, I think the Midnight Express win this match. No, these, I know who wins, but I'm still going
to
drum into it.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, you have like, they've left kind of all the old ways behind, and they're really starting to build something of their own, and they're starting to develop their own, young guys and their own talent, and you can see like Johnny B. Badd, for instance, him really improving in 94, Brian Pillman, you know, Austin. Regal, yeah, Austin, you have the veterans, you have Steamboat, you have Flair, you have Vader, Big Bubba, Guardian Angel, you know, whatever you want to call him.
The Boss.
The Man. Boss, yeah. So it's, I don't know, that like 94 WCW is such, it's such a special thing, but
yeah, and it's definitely a tale of two promotions. Like you look at Spring Stampede and like Starcade, it's hard to believe that it's the same company.
Yeah.
Really.
It's unbelievable. Man, it's Spring Stampede. I mean, like I will fight tooth and nail, saying that is one of the absolute best pay per views of any promotion ever in the history of wrestling.
Oh, no, it's really high up there for me.
Yeah, and then you go from that to Starcade '94. The Hogan and the Butcher. It's and as soon as he comes in that clash, you know, there's a shift, and there's still good stuff, of course. Like I said, through Fall Brawl, or even like I don't know, Halloween Havoc 94 is good too.
And it's not like Hogan comes in and perhaps, I mean, the two matches he has with actually three, including the clash, the matches with Flair are really good to great. I mean,
yeah, they're awesome.
I mean, yeah, it's Ric Flair he's in there with, but Hogan knows how to deliver, and
yeah,
it's just, yeah, he's got to be in there with a Ric Flair. When he's in there with Brother Brutai, it's not quite the same.
Yeah. Yeah, so I don't know, we got a little bit off on a tangent, just kind of reminiscing there, but this, in a lot of ways, the more I think about this match, this kind of sums up everything that WCW is. Like you kind of have to ignore the illogical parts and the ill-conceived and poorly thought out parts of it, and just focus on the actual work in the ring, which is extraordinary and unique, and kind of take everything else around it as just kind of part of the scenery.
Yeah, I would agree with that. That's a lot of WCW in a nutshell, also. Just like the. If it's a 20-minute match, the 18 minutes in the middle are great. It's just their endings are sometimes where they fall apart.
That's a great point. Something I've thought about a lot is that I don't know, in terms of like ranking matches or whatever, is I realized at a certain point that I don't generally care about the finish of a match. It doesn't have very much bearing on what I think of a match.
Yeah, I agree with you there.
And I think that's because I grew up watching WCW, and I think I was just conditioned
Used
to,
to it,
you know, it's the end of the match is gonna be something weird and bad, and that's just what it is, and that doesn't take away from how great the rest of it was. So
yeah.
I it's
Yeah. I
it's
think
just
that's
kind
a
of.
good philosophy also.
So anyways, that's really about all we've got for tonight, Ryan.
Cool.
Do you have any plugs for us?
I was on the we recorded the latest episode of Body Press Your Luck. I'm sure it will be out by the time this comes out. And also with this ring, me and Cindy are we did all the Great American Bash and Bash at the Beach shows. Just, well, five matches from each. So that'll be coming out next week also. So yeah, be on the
Awesome.
lookout for both of those.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, that'll be really cool. Now, speaking of watching wrestling and podcasting with your wife, I will be recording a new episode of You Don't Know Billy Jack with my wife. I am going to try to figure out what nasty wrestling match to make her watch. So, be on the lookout for that. She is already mad at me for it. So, that should be something. I do have let's see, a new episode of Ginny and the Gyms should be coming out sometime as well. And if you want to follow me on Twitter, I am at underscore burning spirits, and of course, the GWCW project is over at facebook.com/GWCW matches. And I do just want to give a quick plug to the PTBN wrestling feed. There are tons of great shows on there. The Place to Be podcast, JT Rosero and Scott Criscolo take you chronologically through the history of WWE, PTBN main event, with hosts Scott Criscolo, Nate Milton, and Steve Willey breaking down all the current events in the world of wrestling. Row One, Seat One, an interesting look inside the world of small town wrestling and beyond, with host Ben Zanny welcoming in a variety of guests every other week. Talkin' WCW heads to Center Stage Theater with Tim Capel, Greg Phillips, and Jennifer Smith as they pay tribute to the legendary promotion from the Dirty South. Body Press Your Luck, like you said, Ryan, is a new wrestling game show hosted by JT Rosero and Jordan Duncan with This Ring, which you also mentioned. You, Ryan, and your wife, Cindy, discuss specific matches, and in this case, Great American Bash matches and Bash at the Beach. So that'll be pretty cool because she hasn't really seen much WCW, right?
Yeah, she is like very like WWE. She knew like Steve Austin in the Rack and WCW. She knows like Ric Flair and this about it.
Yeah. Oh, cool. Yeah, that's going to be, I love hearing people's like reaction to seeing WCW for the first time.
She likes the best set, the like the later ones with the beach in the background and stuff.
Oh yeah. Awesome. Yeah, that's going to be great. Can't wait to listen to that. There is Highway to the Impact Zone, where Logan Croslin and Jacob Williams discuss the era of TNA, starting with the birth of the Impact TV show. The NWA Saturday Special, where Scott and Dr. G talk about both current, but not so much now, but classic National Wrestling Alliance wrestling. And I was on the newest episode of that, talking about the history of the United States Championship. We also have monthly WWE pay-per-view reaction shows and semi-regular shows like Jenny and the Gems, which I mentioned, PTB NXT, Adam's Division, Special Relations, Chicken Salad, Senior Video, NWA Crock and Roll, which just dropped its first episode, and it's a very, very good show, so everybody check that out. There's also the PTBN Pop Feed. There's great content there. Shows like The Year in Pop, The Glenn Butler Podcast Hour, Spectacular, Laughing Theater, DC for You, Marvel Age, The Brother Sister Rewatch Podcast, which is actually over on the Jenny position now, and so much more. So subscribe to both feeds, and while you're at it, there's two other feeds you should subscribe to. Jennifer Smith's The Jenny Position feed. It is the home of Geek and Sassy, Talk and Pop, Freak Out Drive-In, Telling Stories, MCU, Journey Through Infinity, and more. And there's also the North-South Connection, brought to you by JT Rosero and Chad Campbell. It is the new home for the Wrestling War Zone, No Holds Barred, the Extreme Three-Way Dance, Jeff Learns Wrestling, and tons more. And again, like I mentioned, with the GWCW project, we have officially kicked off our 2020 stretch project determining the greatest WCW match ever. You have all year. Well, at this point, you have 22 weeks, I think, to do your research, promote your matches, and build your list. Conversation and rules can be found at facebook.com/GWCW matches. Or on the Pro Wrestling Only message board. And like I said, I am going to post the show when it airs. I'm going to post a link on that Facebook group, and I'm really going to try to get some discussion going about whether or not this should be counted as one match or five separate matches. So I'm hoping to get some good discussion going over there. Now, be sure to not what does this say? Be sure not to forget to check out placetobenation.com each and every day. There's new voices, fresh takes, all kinds of great stuff, sports stuff. We got pop culture, wrestling. We got Trent SmackDown Report on Fox, This Week in the WWE, Polly's Perspective, Ben's Unpopular Opinion. And don't forget about veteran columns like Glenn Butler's Weekly Walk Around the Web. And if you're doing any online shopping, like I know everybody is these days, go to Amazon.com and click on the Amazon banner. Oh, wait. If you shop at Amazon.com, then you should click on the Amazon banner on the right side of the Place to Be Nation homepage, or use placetobenation.com/Amazon. And it helps out PTBN at no cost to you. All right. Ryan, good to talk to you as always.
Yep. Always good.
All right. Well, thank you for listening, everybody. Take care. Bye.
See you next time.
Thank you.